This is the Full Press NBA Podcast.
Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win!
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Bird up fake. Bird takes the shot. It's on! Oh, my goodness!
Presented by Sportscaster.com and distributed by Snowman Digital Media.
Here's Carnes. Let one go from center court.
He got it!
I've had great conversations on this here program, but when Brother Sharif Ahmed joins me to talk some hoops, it's an education for these millennial NBA fans that don't know who brought the current players here. And Sharif joins me on the other side of the hotline right now. How are you, my brother?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Let's have some fun here. I am sick and tired. I am sick and tired of people saying to me that Stephen Curry did not do anything to revolutionize the game, because that is a lie.
It is. Absolutely. Well, what you have to realize is that Steph Curry eliminated a position in basketball, which is the number five.
Yep.
Stretch the court out so much to where now guys that are 6'10", 6'11", and even now 7-footers can now have to shoot the three in order to be in the game. The low post, back to the basket, basketball has now long died. The era we grew up in. And
yeah.
And, you know, he's lighting up. I mean, Steph Curry, before he got injured, was already in the in career statistics and 3 points made, three pointers attempted. We can go on and on. And I read an article this morning that Stephen A. Smith had quoted that, you know, the next basketball season that Steph Curry will be the face of the league. So of course, a lot of people are getting a lot of pushback on that. But the truth is, Now you're bringing a demographic. Now we can talk about demographics of the fan base.
Yep.
Steph Curry goes across all levels of I shouldn't say levels, but reaches out to various communities, ranging from, you know, lower income kids who look up to him and think he's the greatest thing. Then you have, of course, the working class families and their children that look up to them. And also now, you know, suburban America is embracing Steph Curry. Who would ever thought suburban America would embrace an NBA player?
Right.
You know, because back in, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, a lot of the suburban kids had to hide their allegiances of their favorite players, like an Allen Iverson.
Right.
Because they did not want to be looked upon in their communities like, why do you like Allen Iverson? Why do you think he's a great player? Look what he has done.
Mm-hmm.
But now you have Steph Curry who reaches out all across the board in that way as a basketball player. So there's a lot of hate, like you said, about a lot of millennials who are just constantly jumping on this LeBron train. And the thing is that they cannot separate between LeBron the man, which I've said this 1,000 times to my friends. You know, he's a husband, he's a father, he's a provider. He's now using his riches and incorporating his riches into wealth.
He's wonderful. I said this on this program. I give no argument to that either.
Right.
What we have said on this program and others with us, LeBron is a fantastic father and husband, philanthropist. Everything he does off the floor is terrific. Everything he does as an athlete is admirable, but the biggest caveat of all, he ain't a good basketball player.
I'm telling you, man, we can argue with all these LeBron lovers, LeBronomaniacs, LeBron sexuals, whatever you want to call them, but, you know, what I don't get is this. We live in a sports society where numbers matter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Kobe Bryant has won 5 titles, lost twice.
Right.
Magic Johnson won 5 titles, lost 3 times.
Yep.
Tim Duncan won 5 championships, lost 1, which he should have been 6 NBA titles, but that's a whole different topic. But he's 5 championships.
That's a conversation for another time, and I know the exact year you're talking about.
Yes, but the point of the matter is when you bring up this man, the basketball player, LeBron James, and you say, let's just take LeBron James' name out of it.
Right.
Let's say this basketball player is, you know, top 10, top 15 in scoring right now, whatever it may be, but he's 3-5 in finals. People are being like, oh, okay, he's average. But then when you put LeBron's face next to that stat, all of a sudden you're hearing like, oh, he's done this. This is what he averages per 48 minutes. This is what he does when he plays against teams under 500. This is what he does against teams over 500. Or this is when, you know, this is his shooting percentages when he's at home during the playoffs. Everything, now you want to throw these numbers that kind of want to just throw a cloud at the fact that he is 3-5 in the finals. It doesn't get it to me. And everybody constantly tries to throw that all these other stupid stats, and it's driving me nuts. It's like 3-5 in the finals. That's all I got to tell you.
And one of those three shouldn't have been. 2016,
No. The
Cleveland Cavaliers, I will hold on to this point. I know you agree with me, and I know many others agree with me. Millennials are nuts. The Cleveland Cavaliers got the biggest stimulus package in 2016 that they should never have received. The Golden State Warriors, and I know you're not a Warriors fan, but let's look at facts. The Golden State Warriors in 2016 got screwed royally.
Yeah. I would have to agree with you on that. And, you know, another point to that is that two of those championships, shots were made by other players, not him.
Yep. Ray Allen come to mind, folks, 2013.
And then Kyrie Irving in Game 7. Or I don't know if it was Game 6 or Game 7.
It was Game 7, which should have gotten Kyrie Irving a unanimous Finals MVP and not LeBron, mm-hmm. because LeBron didn't. And don't bring that chase down block to me, okay? Don't mm-hmm. bring that chase down block to me, because everybody look at that chase down block, oh my God, he saved Cleveland. Shut up. Kyrie saved Cleveland in Games 5, 6, and 7. If Kyrie doesn't make that shot and you give the Warriors 5 minutes, they would have been pummeled in overtime.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, you and I can talk until we're blue in the face about this, but we're going to get a lot of pushback.
You're darn
too. You know,
I know we are.
Percentages just don't lie, my friend, and it's sad that folks don't see it. And you know, I grant you know, LeBron is a generational player. He's a transcendent player, and
absolutely.
I don't think there will ever be another player of his caliber to
right.
come through again.
Right,
but. But for folks to say, my goodness, it's I'm speechless, and I'm rarely ever speechless.
Right.
And it's, you know, like here's a thing that I posted a few days back, and you chimed in on it. And I just want to, you know, your people to know this. I'll just read this very quickly. In the NBA Finals, LeBron has lost 6 out of the 9 appearances, been swept twice, shot under 40% twice, 2007, 2015, lost 4-1 twice, down 0-3 three times, series 2007, 17, and 18, and is 18-31 in 49 games playoffs played, which is the team's lowest finals wins percentage in NBA history. How can you – how those numbers right there
mm-hmm.
should tell any basketball enthusiast or pundit, whatever it may be, those stats need to stick out. Because those are losing stats. 18-31
18
in playoff
and 31
games.
In finals games. 18-31. Okay.
Exactly.
In World Championship Series games. 18-31. Okay. Let me explain something to you guys. Steph's only lost two finals, 16 and 19. And in 19, he got beat fairly, okay? The Toronto Raptors were one hell of a team. And we went back and forth about how the Warriors can beat the Raptors and how the Raptors can beat the Warriors. Broke it down on this program. The biggest difference is between, you want to talk about faces of the league? Steph Curry is the face of the league now. Stephen Curry has been the face of the league since he's entered from Davidson College. Steph is the face of the league now. Not Derrick Rose, not LeBron, not James Harden, God help me, not Russell Westbrook, God help me again. Stephen Curry has been the face of the league since 2015, and this is the most basic of reasons that Stephen Curry has been the face of the league. Not only to your point where he completely eliminated a position, in a position in which the Warriors did not use sparingly during their dynastic run, and they're preparing for another one, but Stephen Curry has taken an anomaly and has turned it into a weapon. The three-point shot. Let me repeat that for all the fans that tune in to hear you, because I'm getting you on each and every week, if not more than once a week, to help increase our NBA coverage on one of our flagship stations, Arena Sportsnet. Listen to me carefully. Stephen Curry has taken an anomaly and has turned it into a weapon. He's gotten the entire league to try to make 10, 11, 12, 13 three-pointers a game. As a matter of fact, it ain't just Steph. It's the Splash Brothers. But the difference between teams like, the Houston Rockets attempting so many threes per game and the Warriors attempting so many threes per game is pretty simple. The Warriors get those shots within the crux of their offense.
Talking about James Harden and Russell Westbrook, you know, Russell Westbrook. No. You touched on something about them, about being a dynamic backcourt, but Russell Wilson shoots under 30% from the 3-point line.
Yep.
And what you, like you said, is it's a weapon now, and he can't use a weapon. It's like going into a gun battle with a water gun. That's how it is for him shooting a 3-pointer. And when if the playoffs ever happen, but in the NBA playoffs,
it's
they're
going to
tag off of Russ.
It's worse.
They're going to tag off of him.
Yep, it's worse.
And then if Russ decides to dribble penetrate, he's going to get mauled. He's going to get hit. He's going to get bumped. He's going to get checked. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this about a week ago. The refs are not going to call those in the playoffs.
Nope. They're going to say play on.
Yeah, he loses the ball. You're going to have nine players and three officials going the opposite way. But the LeBron thing, though, man, it's just I'm so tired of it.
So am I.
I'm just so tired of it.
LeBron is. Yes. Okay, y'all want me to say that? I'll say that. I'll say it proudly. But Michael Jordan was a transcendent player who actually won, who actually was fundamentally sound, who actually does something LeBron hasn't done in 17 years. And you're a referee. You've been around hoops as long as I, and you've seen this from MJ, from Magic, from Larry Bird, Moses Malone, Clyde Drexler. What's the difference between the players that I mentioned who are Hall of Famers, at Kevin Johnson, Charles Barkley, John Stockton, Karl Malone, and many, many others who perceive Jordan, what's the difference between those players that I just mentioned and LeBron James? It's pretty simple. They trusted their teammates.
Yes. And another thing I want to add on to that, Magic and Bird transitioned the game.
Yes, they did.
They transitioned a game and they saved the league where the games were tape delayed. To whereas you only saw like the game of the week on Saturdays or Sundays or whatever they had them on back on the day with CBS.
Yes.
You only saw the playoffs from pretty much the Western Conference Finals, Eastern Conference Finals on. But when Magic and them came on the scene, they made the money.
Oh, they
put the NBA on the map.
They made a ton of money. Remember when the NBA on CBS was part of CBS Sports Saturday or Sports Sunday, especially during the playoffs?
Way back.
It was 1980. Folks, listen carefully. That was 1978 through 1981. 1981! And then the Sixers played the Lakers in 1982. They took it off of Sports Saturday. It was broadcast live beginning with Game 1 at the fabled Spectrum in Philadelphia. And not even after that, when the Lakers and Celtics got together in 1984, the NBA finally took off.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And then we can transition to Jordan, where Jordan globalized the game of basketball.
He did.
Yeah. His marketing, his shoes, his commercials, Space Jam. I mean, all over the world, you have the Jordan Jumpman somewhere, either if it's on a marquee or if it's graffitied on a wall somewhere in Barcelona or Spain, or some kid in China wearing a Jordan jersey, or some kid, in Africa wearing Chicago Bulls shorts and a Chicago Bulls T-shirt or whatever, or jersey, whatever it may be, And then we can transition to Steph, to where now he transcends the game to where the 3-point line is a weapon,
mm-hmm.
and you're eliminating a position on the court, which has been the foundation of the game of basketball since the beginning of time.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really, folks got to look at it that way.
Yeah.
But it's just that's what they need to focus on. But the problem is with LeBron, people still jumping on that LeBron train
saddens me. It saddens me too. I had Danny Thompson on the show earlier this week, and he makes a great point about who the next 25 players will be, since next year will be the 75th anniversary of the NBA, which brings me to this, with the coronavirus pandemic still going on. He brought up a great, great idea, and I want to get your take on this. How can we bring the NBA back? Do it like the NCAA does for the first round. Make it a one and done. And if you really want to add a little something to it, you have any teams that are separated by a half a game beyond the number 8 spot, you make it a play-in game like the NCAA does. The winner gets either LeBron in the West or Giannis in the East. You make it a one and done in the first round, and then you have mini series, 2 out of 3 the rest of the way. You can either bring them to Las Vegas or to Orlando, and then you settle it. And then you settle it there. When after
right.
the course over the course of this weekend, Donald Trump had a conference call with all of the main players in professional sports. I'm talking about the commissioners: Rob Manfred, Major League Baseball; Roger Goodell, NFL; Adam Silver, NBA; Gary Bettman, NHL; MLS. Everybody. There is a clause that can be activated, and I sure hope it isn't, that's called a doomsday clause. Danny Thompson gave me one hell of an education, and I thank him for this. And there's a possibility that the NBA could be canceled for this season. And I don't think the players will be happy with that, and I hope it doesn't happen. So let me ask you this question. If the NBA – no, change my question – when the NBA comes back, how do you think they should finish this particular season?
Man, first off, it all depends when it happens, when they can start coming back. So if we're going to think, let's just think realistically, let's think in May. I think end of April, early May is when the playoffs kick off, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So If God is good and we get and the sporting world gets the green light to go back to business as usual, they should start the playoffs exactly where they're at. Now,
really,
the reason why, yes, if the league comes back in end of April or in any time in May, You take whoever is the top eight in each division, in each conference, and do the play and start the playoffs immediately. That's what needs to happen if it starts that late. Now, if it starts, let's say, in a couple weeks, let's say in 2 weeks, hypothetically, say in 2 weeks they get the green light to go back, then you can then what you do is the starting point of that date, let's say April 15th, okay, I'm using as an example. Whatever games are scheduled on the 15th, that's where your starting point should be. All the other games are null and void. Even if you have television schedules where you might have like a Sixers-Bucks game or a Lakers-Clippers game, or you have to cut your losses there. Because what your friend had said was to have a one and done, I don't think that would be a great idea because, one, the NBA will lose money. Two, the playoffs is always a seven-game series. It used to be a five-game series.
Yeah, first round was five games.
Right, and it gave the advantage to the team that was a higher seed. But then, of course, the owners complained about it because because they felt it wasn't fair because they wanted to get that revenue, whatever it may be. It's a money thing.
Mm-hmm.
On paper, that idea would be fantastic. But I'm an NBA guy. I would like to see. Let's say, I would like the Memphis Grizzlies playing the LA Lakers. They're going to get crushed the first two games. We know that.
I would
like to see the Lakers go to Memphis and play them. I want to see if Ja Morant is going to drop 35, 15, and 12 in Memphis.
Yeah. All the barbecue will be sold out for those two games.
Yes. What I'm saying is that, his idea is a fantastic idea, but one thing, it's a monetary thing.
Yeah.
You got money all up. Yeah. It's money, TV, advertisers, shoe companies, they're all going to take a hit in his format. And again, I'm not knocking on his format because the format is a fantastic idea. But there's always a flip side to that, and the one thing that drives the NBA is money.
True.
And there's too much money. So that's where I stand on that. It all depends when it starts. If it starts in May, you just pretty much close out the regular season, take your first eight, the 16 teams, and just start the playoffs right then and there.
Yeah, and it's going to be all about revenue. And if we play late into June, we play late into June. So I see the argument for both you guys. Man, oh, man.
Yeah.
I see the argument for both of you guys. Sharik Ahmed joins me. Let's talk a little Hall of Fame, shall we?
All right.
Well, Kevin Garnett, Kobe Bean Bryant, God rest his soul, Tamika Catchings, and Tim Duncan selected for enshrinement into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. The only one that isn't going to make a speech is Kobe, and because we tragically lost him. I will have to be honest. Kobe's was the most anticipated speech by yours truly since Michael Jordan gave his.
Yes. Well, Michael Jordan's Hall of Fame speech was pretty bad. Let's be real. It was bad. It was bad. But yes, you're right. It that is one hell of a class.
Isn't
it? You have 11 world titles.
Yep.
You have 11 world championships going into the hall.
Mm-hmm.
You have Kevin. I think my math might be incorrect here, but you can help me out on this. I think Kobe came out in 96.
Yes.
And Garnett came out the year after, correct? Or the year before?
Year before.
Okay. So you have 95 and 96 there, and then 97, Duncan came in.
Yep.
That was the era. That era right there was the era that changed everything. Because that changed everything, but it was transcendent because in the 90s, you know, that was when, you know, they Kobe and Garnett got Jordan's Bulls right at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tim Duncan came along, and I think he probably played Jordan maybe two times because in 98, the Western Conference played him twice. I mean,
yeah.
When Jordan left the league was now in good hands with these three guys.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, the ratings were horrible. The ratings were gone because Jordan had left. But these three guys that are going into the Hall, we can all be in agreement that they put the league on their shoulders.
They did.
And for a stretch, there was Lakers-Spurs championships, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I'm a diehard Spurs fan, and Kobe would always defer to a couple of those Spurs teams that they ran into in the playoffs,
yeah.
and says that those are the toughest teams that he had to play against because he had a young Manu, a young Tony, a young Duncan.
And plus, and for a couple of years, he had the Admiral, David Robinson.
The first two, yes, 99, I think it was 99 and 03.
99 and 03, he had David Robinson, who was at the tail end of his career, and I love the hell out of David Robinson.
Yes.
In the Admiral play. Anybody, I can honestly say, aside of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Moses Malone, and Robert Parrish, if there was a center that drove me nuts, but I loved seeing play, it was David Robinson.
Yeah, yeah, that's another good topic we could talk about in the future about the bigs. But Robinson's up there.
Mm-hmm.
There's no argument there. Robinson's up there. I think he had a 71 point game.
Yes,
I forgot what year it was.
1994.
He had a 71 point game, and I didn't think that would ever happen, but it did. But yeah, this Hall of Fame class is going to be, it's going to be a tough one because I'm interested to see who's going to speak in his behalf.
And I think the answer would be his wife, Vanessa.
I would believe she would enshrine
him with a Hall of Fame speech. But that's going to be even tougher for her to deliver if you take a look at the speech she gave at his memorial service at the Staples Center. I think Kobe would be the only enshrinee that would have two speakers, Vanessa Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal, because Shaquille had me cracking up when he was telling some stories about Kobe at the memorial service.
But also, what I wanted to tell you, Rudy Tomjanovich is in that draft or is in that Hall of Fame class as well.
As well as Eddie Sutton.
Yeah, the Baylor coach.
Yep.
No, was he Baylor?
Oklahoma State.
You're absolutely right. That's going to be a pretty solid class. And there's a couple others here. The Baylor women's coach, Kim Mulkey, is going to be in there.
Kim Mulkey. Yep. And Tamika Catchings, WNBA champion. I love seeing Tamika play. And I was talking with my wife Saturday about how much I love women's basketball. People still to this day, and I'm 25 years in the game, call me weird for loving women's basketball. Oh, me well, I absolutely love women's hoops. Since the first women's Final Four that took place in Norfolk, Virginia in 1982, I was hooked. I was hooked since then.
Well, I started following the WNBA. I kind of do follow the NBA, WNBA now. But, you know, Deanna Taurasi, to me, can play in the with the men.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely. I'll give you
when she came into the league, I'm telling you, that dribble drive, the mm-hmm. jump shot, the three-pointers, she's – you can't really describe her. She will go down when she's done with her career as the greatest women's basketball player ever.
I want to see the WNBA put together a 50 greatest. I want to see them put together their 50 greatest or their 25 greatest since next year's their 25th season.
That would be very good.
That would be fun.
That would be very good.
That would be fun. Let's move on.
Yes.
Since we're talking NBA hoops here, Sharif Ahmed joining me here on the program. We talked about this last time, but it deserves a deep dive. What were the Rockets thinking when they traded Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook to try and improve their team? All you're doing is trading a player who's 34 for a player who's 30, 31. It's basically the same play. It's basically the same player that, I hate to say this, fans of Chris Paul and fans of Russell Westbrook, that doesn't have a consistent jump shot.
No. Well, let me tell you this, man. And when we talked about this a while back, it's just the fickle fans here. They go by what's on paper.
Right.
They go by what's on paper. And the thing is about Chris Paul is Chris Paul he gets respect. He gets ears. He
Copy
gets a
that.
Locker room. He can control a locker room.
Copy that.
James Harden was controlling the locker room.
That is so true. And I put up a post on Saturday, and I know you had fun with this. And I'm going to roll out the red carpet for you. I put up a post that began with this. The Houston Rockets' biggest mistake had very little to do with James Harden and Russell Westbrook. And you know what that mistake was. They fired Kevin McHale.
Yeah. They did. And who orchestrated that? Harden did.
James Harden.
And Kevin McHale is an old lion. He's an old school cat.
Yep.
And the thing is, though, the problem is with today's NBA players, they don't like to be yelled at. They don't like to be held accountable. They don't want to be held responsible for their actions. And that's how Russell Westbrook and James Harden are. You got two people in the same locker room who both demand attention, who are the ones getting all the mics put in their face, pregame and postgame. These are the two guys that are in highlight videos, and they're constantly on the ESPN ticker on the bottom saying they scored 35 points, 15 assists, and all this other nonsense.
Yep.
That's what everyone is thriving off of.
Yeah.
And they were like 8-2, and everyone thought, like, up, they're going to win the championship. Up, they're going to win the whole thing. Up, they're going to be this, they're going to be that.
Yep.
But what people don't know now is that the Rockets are a 6 seed, and they're 2.5 games ahead of the 7 seed.
It was a smokescreen.
So if you, yeah. So if you were to finish off the season, the Rockets can go in as a 7 seed and have to play Denver.
Which is trouble in and of itself because Denver is an up and coming team. Just ask the Portland Trailblazers last year.
Yeah. And the thing is that you think they're gonna And I think I threw their salaries for the next 4 years.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
Yeah, and then next year's salary cap is going to go up to $132 million.
And you're talking a team like the Houston Rockets having the wherewithal to manage that salary cap, and they've basically eaten it for the next 4 years. They've basically eaten it with two players for 4 years.
Yeah, and what's crazy about it is I'm just doing the math right now, and this is your starting five. One, two, three, four. This is your starting five. You know how much the salary is for the starting five of the Rockets right now if they don't do nothing about it?
About $180 million, I think.
No, it's $115 million. And you have by going by those numbers, they're already over the luxury tax.
That they are.
Which they have to pay another, I think, 17 or 20% of the salary cap of luxury tax.
Yep.
And next year you're going into a season with just five players with $115 million payroll with five players.
For five all players.
And four out of those five players are well in their 30s. You're gonna try to trade Eric Gordon. No one wants to trade for him for a $14 million price tag.
Nope.
Because the guy can't play 45 or 50 games healthy.
Kind of reminds you what Anthony Davis is going through right now.
Right. And then PJ Tucker is making about $8-9 million, which is cheap. It's a good number.
But what has he done to earn that $8, $9 million? What has he done to earn his salary? And I hate to say this, and I know you're surrounded by Rockets fans, and I hate to say this, James Harden fans, but what has James Harden done to earn his salary since he's been in Houston? What's he done?
I don't know.
Can we be a little real here? What is not just James Harden, what has Russell Westbrook done in half of his first season in Houston? You really are going to, when this trade, let me back up a little bit. When this trade broke last summer, and I got the notification on my phone, I must have stared at the phone for a good 10 minutes, and my mouth was agape, reading Chris Paul had been traded for Russell Westbrook, and I came on that day, and my literal first question was, what?
And did you see the capital that they got in return for that?
I did.
They got a lot of draft equity out of that trade.
Mm-hmm. The same way the Warriors had a lot of draft equity now. The same way the Warriors have a lot of draft equity now. You know what the dangerous part is? Houston wasted all their equity trying to beat the Golden State Warriors since 2015, and they're not going to have a chance to even face them because the rise of the Warriors is imminent. I'm talking about next season and beyond. We're going to have the second part, not the second half, but the second part of this Warrior dynasty. I'm sorry, Laker fans. I'm sorry, Rocket fans. I'm sorry, Bucks fans. But if you think this season, which has been ravaged by injuries for Golden State, is going to bury the Warriors, think again.
And there's also rumor that no matter what the Warriors get, because the Warriors are getting a lottery pick this year.
Yep, that they are.
And I think they're either the or the second highest. They have the second highest amount of ping pongs. And they said wherever they land, that pick is up for grabs for trade.
You know the first two teams that'll bite. You know the first two teams that'll be willing to buy, pending what happens with the NBA World Championship, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Because Andrew Wiggins is out of there.
He's a rental.
Andrew Wiggins is gone. Okay, D'Angelo Russell was a rental. He gone. Long gone. The Warriors are building for the future. Hey, Lakers, take a lesson, won't you? The Warriors are building for the The Warriors are building for the future. I said something on this program, and I believe you were with me when I said this. Anthony Davis is a one-year rental.
He is. Absolutely 100%.
Anthony Davis is a one-year rental, and this is the year. And you know what's bad? The Lakers traded away their draft equity for someone who was available just 1 year after that. This was the summer. Anthony Davis was available to all bidders. Here's a thought process. Imagine Anthony Davis playing in Northern California. And I don't mean with the Kings.
Well, we did. What another thing that he's been saying, too, and he's been sending, like, these cryptic messages and texts, is that he wants to go back home. And we all know where he – a lot of the folks know where he's from.
Home is Chicago. My hometown.
Yeah.
Imagine Anthony Davis in red and black reviving our franchise.
And the thing about that idea is this with the Bulls. One, they have an extremely young young talented group.
Very talented.
You know. And on top of that, they have cap space.
Yep. Lots of it.
So, yes. So if that were to happen, then then the NBA, the Eastern Conference, will see a ginormous shift in power.
And I'll give you a third rumor. I'll give you a second rumor concerning the Chicago Bulls. And it's the following. Anthony Davis ain't the only one that may want to come home.
What's the other one?
You know I got a wicked smile on my face as we talk about this, right?
Yeah.
I'll tell you the second player who I think I'm totally wrong about this, but my spider senses have been up. Okay? Not only is Anthony Davis wanting to come home, but so is a former MVP we call Derrick Rose.
What? No way.
I don't expect that to happen. I don't expect that to happen, okay? I will preface my rumor by saying I do not expect it to happen. Too many bad things soured the Bulls with Derrick Rose, okay? But you know I like making people angry.
So do I.
When it comes to my knowledge of the NBA, you know I love pissing people off.
Yes.
That's why I love having you on this program. You know I love ticking people off. What if it happened, though? Would it be a good reunion? Would it be a bad reunion? I think the only reunion is going to be Anthony Davis going home to Chicago. And Anthony Davis, if he goes home to Chicago after this season, because the Lakers are going to fall short of an NBA title. And the unibrow goes home to Chicago, to his family, to a team that he loved watching, i.e. the Chicago Bulls. They have their point guard in the future in Coby White out of North Carolina. Lauri Markkanen from deep. All right? Thomas Satoransky, also from deep. Folks, they would be two players away from making another run to the East Finals. And those two players can possibly be acquired during the summer. Because I'll tell you a player right now that's playing out west that could come east and wreck shop. Andrew Wiggins. If the Warriors swing a trade for Andrew Wiggins and they get even more draft capital, can you imagine the fit for both teams?
Yeah, that would be a very good fit, because right now, you know, they're trying to the Warriors are trying to stack up chips right now.
Yep.
And use that capital to try to get another marquee superstar into their roster, which I think is going to happen.
And
we're just going to have to see.
Yeah. Well,
this virus needs to get the hell on with itself.
It needs to. I love it. It needs to get the hell on and leave us alone. It really needs to leave us alone.
It does.
My brother Sharif Ahmed talking some hoops with me. Thanks a lot, my friend. I truly appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on. Love talking hoops with you, buddy.
The proceeding has been a presentation of Snowman Digital Media. Copyright 2020, all rights reserved.
They do have a timeout. Decide not to use it. Curry, way downtown. Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry!
1 second remaining in the regular season, possibly. Out to Kobe. Far away, high end.
What a way to finish! Are you kidding me?
Curry comes to the ball. Goes to the corner. Catches. Works up contest. Fade away. Three. Short. Rebound space. Curry in the corner. Shoots. On the way. Got it! He hit it!
They get it to Fisher.
He scores! Eric Fisher
scores at the buzzer! And it goes to Bird. Bird up fakes. Bird takes the shot. It's gone!
All right, it's win or lose. Game six for the Bulls. 10 seconds. And with it, of course, the championship. Jordan, 20-footer, head of the key. Good! Chicago by one. And the Utah Jazz take time. Michael Jordan from the top of the key to put the Bulls up 87-86.
For more information, log on to snowmandigitalmedia.com.